Yo, welcome into CHGO White Sox Podcast, presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook. Download the app today and use promo code CHGO when you sign up. Welcome into Studio A of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm Sean Anderson, the host of the CHGO White Sox Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. And alongside me, as always, is the full CHGO White Sox crew. As the CHGO Cubs crew said, back from Australia, Vinny Duber. You can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber.
After all these weeks.
You were somehow interviewing Dylan Cease here, Pedro Grifol, and Andrew Benintendi at 35th and Shields, but also in Australia.
It's been a month. I've been back from Australia for over a month.
Man of many talents. You can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. And that's Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow the man in the middle in on Twitter at EchnerWall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. We got a pretty big guest, and we actually don't have to do anything else for the next 25 minutes because you already talked to Dylan Cease.
It's true. We the timing worked out where we were able to chat earlier this morning, and we have it ready for you right here.
Yeah, so we got about 24 minutes of Dylan Cease talking about 2023, what he's working on in the offseason, his froth and disc golf love. We got some honey talk as well. A great chat between Vinny and Dylan Cease.
Dylan Cease, thank you so much for joining the show. We got the White Sox big second place Cy Young finisher on the show today. Dylan, how's your offseason been?
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been great. I mean, it's going by super fast, but they always seem to. So we're right about at that time.
Hey, we saw the picture over the offseason that the White Sox tweeted out. I'm glad to see that the mustache is back.
Yeah, it's not solo yet, but it's definitely I have the option again if I want to, for sure.
Was it gone during the offseason? We saw the picture with you and the cat. Was it missing in action for a while, or is that an old picture?
No, it was gone for it was gone for a good amount of the offseason.
Well, I'm glad it's back and everything's okay. What have you been working on this offseason? What has it been like, kind of getting ready for 2023?
Yeah, I'm still pretty much in my buildup phase. I'm actually off the mound for the first day today, so it's been more just getting the body ready, getting the arm in shape, and but a big emphasis for me has been working on my changeup. So I'm pretty much just working on throwing it with arm speed and kind of getting that feel, like not being too worried about the shape of the pitch or where the accuracy of it, but throwing it like with my long toss. And then throwing it in the flat ground just so I can kind of try to feel it out.
What kind of stuff have you been working on with those specific pitches? I mean, you got what, velocity changes or anything different? You adding anything else? What can folks kind of expect to see maybe a little different in the arsenal this upcoming season?
Yeah, I think the changeup's going to be harder. I don't know how hard exactly. I'm still kind of in the early phases of tinkering with it, but it should be harder at the very least because I'm going to be throwing with arm speed. So everything else should be hopefully pretty much the same with just a little bit better command. But the changeup's definitely going to be the biggest. I think you'll see the biggest difference in the changeup.
I'm sure this is something you're going over on a very regular basis with Ethan Katz. What is that relationship like during the offseason? We hear so much sometimes, be it from the manager or from you guys when you talk in season about sending videos back and forth. What is the daily working relationship like with Ethan when you guys aren't in the same room together?
Yeah, it's more of he'll kind of lay out a schedule for me at the beginning of the offseason. And then a lot of the work is really just build up work. So there's not a whole lot to report on other than like, hey, is the arm feeling good? Is the body feeling good? So I'm at the point now where there's a little bit more like lately I've kind of been, I'll call him or I'll text him and say, hey, the changeup was really good today. I was happy with the feel of it or the, how it's coming on my hand, all that. But right now it's still pretty early in terms of, actually working on stuff, but like today I'm sure we'll talk today because it's my first mound day, so I actually think he's planning on coming out here in a couple weeks and or maybe even 10 days or so just to kind of see it in person before we get going.
So he's, are you, you're just down in Georgia right now, right? So he's kind of making a whirlwind tour across America to visit all his pitchers.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. It's a grind.
You've got a, you got a new manager. What have your conversations been like with Pedro, and what can kind of the, what's he kind of telling not just you, but kind of all the guys about what he's bringing to the table this year?
Yeah. So I had a nice, probably 20 or 30 minute conversation with him. Relatively close to when he signed, or when we signed him. And he basically just, you know, said that with him, communication's huge. You know, we're going to have a relationship. And pretty much, you know, it wasn't even that much about baseball. It's just, hey, I want to get to know you. We're going to have a relationship. And, you know, we're going to, you know, away from baseball, even, I want to get to know you kind of thing. So, that was the biggest thing. And then, I recently had a guy come up to me where I train, and, he said, hey man, I wish we hired that guy as our manager. Like, I love that guy. So, it's, yeah, definitely heard a lot of good things about him.
What sort of fit does he look like he's going to be for this team? I mean, is he going to be somebody who kind of easily blends in with what you guys already got going, or do you think he's going to come in and establish something new, which also is perhaps going to benefit you guys?
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a little bit of both. It's hard for me to say. I mean, I'm still kind of young in my career, so I don't really know. You know, I don't necessarily know what to expect in a situation like this. But I think just from what I've heard, I think the communication is going to be good, and the you know, I guess what he's trying to preach and what he's trying to communicate is going to be good. So. You know, that's, for me, I'm I don't know, I guess either way I'm coming with kind of the same goal and the same mindset. So, I think we're all going to work together, and, you know, I think he'll bring some positive change here for sure.
At the end of last season, you guys were obviously talking a lot about, you know, you got to wait till the year's over and kind of sit with it in the off season and evaluate kind of everything that happened. After sitting with the, you know, the disappointing results that you guys had last year for a few months now, how do you kind of look back on last season and what do you kind of evaluate as, you know, what maybe went wrong for you guys?
Yeah, I think it was a couple of unexpected things all coming together. You know, obviously the injuries didn't help. And then a couple guys, you know, we had some performance that was lower than expected. So I think, you know, I think just a combination of that, injuries and lower than expected performance. So it was definitely disappointing, but I think there's a really big desire to show everyone that's not the team that we are, and that we are more of the team from 2021, and even better, hopefully.
Was there a noticeable difference in the clubhouse last year and than there was maybe the year prior, or even a few years prior? And was that basically just, it's no fun to lose, or was there something else that you could detect there?
Noticeable difference. I mean, I don't know. It never felt like we really got on any of those hot streaks that we had before. You know, it kind of felt like it was always like one for one, or, you know, we'd lose two, win three, lose four. You know, we didn't really get on any good streaks. And, you know, I guess it is, you know, our record was, you know, at 500. So I guess that is, that really is the story of the season. It was kind of just, you know, pretty average all the way through.
Do you think a new voice in Pedro is going to help you guys kind of avoid that kind of thing this year? Obviously, injuries and stuff are out of anybody's control, but, yeah. You know, do you expect a new voice to make a difference in that department?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think he's definitely going to help, I guess, have a handle on everything. But at the end of the day, too, I feel like a lot of it is us showing up and, you know, playing to our abilities, really. You know, there is only so much coaches and managers can do. It's the players that have to show up, you know. So hopefully it's a combination of both.
What was it like this offseason to finish second in the AL Cy Young vote?
Yeah, that was pretty surreal. You know, it's I think it's one of those that I don't know. It still doesn't even really feel, I guess, real in a sense. But I don't know. For me, I guess I've kind of just put it behind me, and I'm trying to focus on this upcoming season. You know, I don't want to get lost in that and then not prepare or not be ready for this upcoming season or get lackadaisical. So it's a great honor. I actually haven't even reflected on it too much. Like I said, I'm trying to really just get ready for this season, but you know, it's a really great honor, and I owe a lot of people a lot of credit for helping me get to that point, for sure.
I know last year you said, when you were talking about the All-Star team, you know, that maybe provided a little bit of a motivating factor for you. Is there a motivating factor in wanting to be number one, even after getting as high as number two in that Cy Young vote?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's just, for me, it's coming down to trying to be the best player I can be. I feel like anytime you do like a comparing in that sense, it can be easy to like get lost in what do you actually need to do to be your best version, you know? So that's the biggest focus. Obviously you always want to finish first and all that good stuff. But now for me, really, I'm just, it's the same as always. I'm just trying to focus on improving myself and whatever happens.
How's the honey business?
Oh, it's going pretty good. My dad hasn't been able to check on the bees lately because it's been a little cold and rainy, but hopefully they're still kicking. I really enjoy being able to provide some honey to the guys throughout the year. So I'm actually hoping to get some honey production going on this other project I got going on as well. So yeah, we'll see if we can make that happen.
Please share if you can.
Yeah, I can probably announce it, I guess. So basically, I'm in the process of building a elite level disc golf course with some of my buddies. One of my buddies, Paul, who plays. So yeah, it's we might put some bees out there.
Very nice, very nice. So have you gotten, what have the reviews been from the teammates on the honey?
Oh, delicious! Everyone loves it, unless they don't want to hurt my feelings. But it is delicious honey, so I believe them.
There you go. There you go. All right. Well, let's talk about the disc golf then. What you brought it up. Okay. What have you been playing this off season? What's the best course you played this off season?
So I played best course. Probably, I played in a tournament in South Florida with my buddy Paul and his brother. The course was called. Honestly, I can't think of the course off the top of my head. It was great though. It had like a lot of water and iguanas and monkeys and all this crazy stuff. Just a random park in South Florida. That course was really cool. Other than that, I mean, I always like Bowers Park in Tuscaloosa. Yeah, other than that, I honestly didn't really get to play a whole lot this off season. So
there was monkeys on the course?
Yeah. Monkeys. It was, we had heard about them and we didn't see them until day three. The last day they were like on the ground by the parking lot. So everyone was freaking out. It was pretty funny.
You don't got to worry about them taking the disc.
Honestly, if a monkey took my disc, I think I would just have to chalk it up to fate.
Just for the story, right?
Yeah.
You'll trade the disc for the story. What are you looking forward to? What's your number one course you want to play in 2023? You haven't played before.
Hopefully mine.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
It should be up and running by then. So, yeah, hopefully mine.
Awesome. What's your favorite spot out in Arizona? You play out in Arizona during spring?
Yeah, there's Fountain Hill, and then there's a course called, I think it's the Memorial. Arizona doesn't have the greatest disc golf courses, in my opinion, but they're pretty good. I don't really get to play, honestly. Once the season starts, I don't like risking it, but I'll get to maybe, I don't know, two or three rounds in over the course of the entire season if I'm lucky.
It's an off-season adventure. There you go.
More of an off-season adventure. Absolutely.
What do you know about your new teammate, your new rotation mate, Mike Clevenger?
You know, not much other than just, I've obviously watched him go about his business since, how long has he been in the league? Since 2014, 2015, maybe earlier. So yeah, I mean, I've definitely watched him pitch a bunch. I haven't really connected with him, but he's, you know, obviously a very talented pitcher.
Yeah, good addition. What do you make of this rotation as a whole?
Yeah, I like where we're at. I mean, I think it definitely adds some depth. You know, we got, I think Gio's primed for a great bounce back year. I think Lance is feeling good, and that's, you know, that's a big thing. If he makes all of his starts, that's an all-star caliber pitcher that we have. So, yeah, I think we're in a good spot.
You brought up Lucas. How hard is he working this offseason?
Yeah, he's getting after it. I mean, he always works hard, but, you know, he's very competitive. He's not a guy that likes to, he's not a guy that likes to lose or likes to, you know, do poorly. So, I know that he's, you know, taking everything very serious and working at it.
What is Lance like behind the scenes? Obviously White Sox fans have, they love watching him. They love the way he acts on the mound when the cameras are not on and, you know, he's behind the doors. What is it like to be Lance Lynn's teammate?
Yeah, Lance is, man, I could use a lot of words to describe him. He's definitely a leader, definitely a little bit of the sheriff, which, is, you know, every team needs. Great sense of humor. I think the thing about Lance is he's not afraid to say what he's thinking. You know, he's not going to sugarcoat it. So you always know what you're getting, what he's thinking, which is great. Yeah. And he's, I mean, you know, picture a little more tame version of how he is on the mound. That's pretty much what he's like. You know, he's what you see is what you get. And, you know, for me, I mean, I definitely enjoy his sense of humor.
Have you talked with Liam Hendricks since he announced what he's going through?
Yeah, we've talked a little bit. I've tried to more just give him a little bit of space because I know that, you know, he's going through a lot and a lot of people are probably trying to reach out to him and talk to him. But, you know, obviously that's something you never want to see, and it's very tragic, but, you know, we'll definitely be in touch, and, yeah, I'm hoping I get to see him a good amount this year.
Any conversation amongst the guys about maybe what you might be doing to support him, whether that's, you know, something that fans will see on the field or something you guys are just going to do behind the scenes?
Yeah, I've been talking with Gio a little bit. You know, we're definitely going to be involved in that sense. To what extent, I'm not sure, but, you know, we're obviously going to give him as much support as we possibly can.
A lot of folks talking, I think this happened about a year ago, but a lot of folks noticed that Scott Boras is your agent now. What are your conversations with him like? He's obviously such a high profile guy in the sport. Yeah. As someone who is, you know, his client now, what is it like when you talk with him?
Yeah, man, I always feel like I leave the conversations learning something, you know. I think that's one of the things that really makes him effective is he's a great communicator, and he'll find a way to tell you an interesting story with what he's trying to communicate. And then, you know, he's able to weave that in. So he's able to tell you the facts, he's able to tell you the stories, and you know, it's always really, really intriguing. I've been saying he needs to write a book just based on, you know, the very few stories. I'm sure he's got a million of them. So yeah, it's always a breath of fresh air to hear him talk and, you know, kind of see what he's doing.
Has he given you a little different outlook on your career and maybe kind of the way you want to go about things moving forward?
Yeah, I think a different outlook. I mean, I think he does a really good job of kind of explaining to you how he sees you and like analytically and numbers wise, kind of where you're fitting in and you know, at the same time, you know, also like what areas can be improved on. You know, it's not like he's just sitting there, you know, blowing smoke up your rear end. He's going to sit and tell you, but at the same time, when he talks to you, he's able to do it in a way that's really, really confidence boosting, which I think is important. So you know, if that's the biggest thing really is just, you know, we focus on performance and how to be competent and you know, he's always got a lot of good tips in that area.
When he talks to us at the winter meetings, he's got this, you know, list of jokes and puns that he's ready to unleash. Has he talked to you? Obviously, you've got the last name, makes it for an easy pun setup. Is he run any of these by you yet?
No, but I mean, I'm sure he's got some he's got to unleash that he's probably had in the wing for a while.
Yeah, yeah, I could expect that. Do you know Dansby Swanson? The new Cubs guy, obviously grew up in the Atlanta area. You know, he's in town now. Do you know him? Did you face him in high school, anything like that?
I don't know him personally, but funny enough, my first varsity pitching outing, my sophomore year, I closed against Marietta High School, and I did face Dansby. That's back when he was a switch hitter.
Well, and what was the outcome?
He popped up the center field, but I got to say, and I hate to be this guy, I threw one right down the middle that was called a ball that would have been a strikeout. Wow. I'll tell you what, I'll send you the clip if I can find it.
You've got it on video.
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Oh my goodness. So we can dig this up when the robot umps come along in however many years, you can rectify that in some fashion.
Yeah, we'll send it to Mythbusters and we'll have them prove that the ball was in fact over the plate.
There you go. Hey, you got a chance now to make up for it, to set history straight now, because you'll be seeing him in Crosstown for what, six times this year.
Yeah, ball doesn't lie.
There you go. What do you make of the AL Central? Obviously, we got some big news with Carlos Correa going back to Minnesota. What do you make of these teams that you guys are going to be going up against for the division this year?
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, I'd have to look at all their rosters and all that, but it feels like it's pretty similar. The teams will be pretty similar, except I think the Guardians added Josh Bell. Did they add anyone else? They added Bell for sure.
They got a few guys. They got a few guys here and there. Bell's the big name. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's gonna be pretty similar. I mean, for me, the biggest thing is I'm always more of a, you got to focus inward and focus on you, you know? So, you know, obviously every team's going to be doing what they're doing, but you know, I think it's hard to dispute us being the most talented team, you know? So, I mean, we really don't have any excuses in that area. So now we got to figure out how to execute and how to really kind of make it congruent and make it all come together.
Obviously, you guys are trying to play the way you guys want to play, but was there anything you could learn from the way the Guardians seemed to approach things last year, the way just kind of their mindset and maybe some of the little things that they were doing right all last year?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the things they do is they're pretty fundamentally sound, and they really try hard. It's a big hustle team, and you know, if anything, I think we got to match that for sure.
I don't know if you're into predictions or not, but when you look at your team and when you get to Glendale and you look around that locker room, what can this team do? What are your guys' expectations for the White Sox in 2023?
Yeah, I think you know, I think we're a lot better than what we showed last year. You know, for me, like I said, it's I'm kind of more focused on the what we have to do right now. I like to focus on the steps, and whatever the results are, that's what they are. I think if you focus on the results, it can get you off of what you need to be focusing on, and maybe add a little too much pressure or add a little too much just unnecessary you know, thoughts, I suppose. So you know, I think we all know that we have the talent. You know, that's undeniable. And not to mention, you don't even have to have the most talent to be the winning team. So you know, it's if we execute, if we can play like we know we can play, then I think the sky's the limit. And everyone thinks that as well. You know, we just, you know, it's a matter of molding it and making it happen. We have power, we got great pitching. So, you know, we have a lot of positives to work with. Now we just got to make it happen.
You pitched in the playoffs 2 years ago, and I know you talked then about what a big deal that was for you. How hungry are you to do it again, to get back to that October stage?
Yeah, very excited, very hungry. Unfortunately, I wasn't super polished my first go around, and so I want another shot at it with this much more experience, and you know, this new level of ability that I feel like I have. It's my first go around, it was one of the coolest experiences. I mean, that however many people were at Guaranteed Rate that day, I mean, it was so electric. I was throwing 101 purely because of, you know, the fans giving me adrenaline, which was incredible. So I want another go around where I actually know how to control myself and how to focus and how to fill up the strike zone with my secondary, all that stuff that I didn't really have a great ability to do in my first go around.
All right, before you go, we're seeing you right now. You've got the full beard. Yeah, are we going down back to the regular mustache for opening day, or is this going to be just kind of feeling it out and see what fits best for you?
I think there's a good chance for the regular mustache, but I like to keep people on their toes, so I'm not going to guarantee it, but I think there's a good chance.
All right. Dylan Cease, thank you so much for joining the CHGO White Sox podcast. We will see you in Arizona.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you to Dylan Cease for joining Vinny Duber. Thank you to Vinny Duber for doing the work, doing the interviewing, reaching out, getting Dylan on the show and getting the exclusive talk with him. We'll talk more about Vinny's chat with Dylan in just a second. We'll take a quick ad break here. Shady Rays, if you are in the Georgia sun, trying to protect yourself from the Georgia sun at a Marietta Milton high school baseball game.
All the reflections coming off peaches.
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't it the sunshine state?
That would be Florida.
Oh, it's the peach state.
That's close.
Actually, that's Denver.
It's close.
It's the sunshine state.
Oh, okay. Oh, one of them's close. What's that from?
Old school.
Okay. So Shady Rays never understood why sunglasses were so expensive, so they set out to change it. You don't have to break the bank for quality sunglasses this winter because our friends at Shady Rays have you covered. Shady Rays are premium polarized shades featuring world-class optical clarity, substantial durability, and styles catered to everyone and every lifestyle. And the best part about Shady Rays, they have the most insane protection program in all of eyewear, lost and broken replacements. If you lose or break your shades on day one, they told us that they will send you a brand new pair. No questions asked. You dropped it in the lake, off a cliff, anything, they'll replace them. It's why Shady Rays customers have given them over 200,000 five-star reviews. The three of us have our own pairs of Shady Rays and all love our pairs, and Shady Rays stands behind their product and told our team that if anyone has a problem, they throw profit out the window and do what it takes to get it right. They offer free returns and exchanges. You either love the shades or Shady Rays will pay you to ship them back. That's it. So exclusively for our listeners, Shady Rays is running their deepest deal of the season. Use code CHGO for 50% off two or more pairs at ShadyRays.com. It's buy one, get one free. You can get two pairs for as low as $54. Redeem only at ShadyRays.com where you can find all their newest and best shades. Also got to let you know about Game Time. Game Time is the hottest new ticketing site that makes it easier than ever to score the best deals on tickets to sports, concerts, and shows. If you ever dreamed of sitting in a seat you never thought you could, like the 50-yard line, courtside, behind home plate, floor seats at a concert, on the glass of the Blackhawks game tonight. Kev, you're working GN. They're here tonight, right?
I'm not going there tonight, but I have used Game Time to go to Hawks games many times in my life.
Someone you work with's going there because they're playing the Sabres at the United Center. So if you are looking for something to do tonight, you won't find a better deal this season on Blackhawks tickets. It was created by the fans for the fans. Game Time also guarantees the lowest price. So if you love CHGO, then you love Game Time. The best way to support us is by buying your tickets through the link in the description. Join over 15 million people who have downloaded the Game Time app and score the best seats to all your favorite events. Vinny, you were the man who talked to Dylan Cease, the whole 25-minute chat right there. What was the thing that stuck out the most to you out of his answers?
I think these guys get it. I think these guys know what's ahead of them. I think they know that last year it did not work at all when it came to what they were trying to do. And I think they know that, listen, they know what they're capable of. They know how they should be playing on a nightly basis. If they can do that, then, yeah, they're good enough to be at the top of the division, certainly, if not the top of the American League. I think, though, that they have realized that that's not going to be automatic, that they're going to have to do what it takes to get that done. The comment that he had about the Guardians, when I asked him about the Guardians, was, hey, they try really hard, and we're going to have to match that. Last year, and certainly Dylan's not the only one. We heard from Liam Hendricks all throughout last year or Jose Abreu or whatever it was saying, we kind of thought we were going to walk into this thing and just repeat 2021 over again. you know, it's a tough way to have to learn that lesson, but it might be a lesson that has been learned. You couple that with what Pedro Grifol wants to see from these guys. He's making the connections, as Dylan said, to reach out to everybody on the team and kind of let them know what he expects from them. Put that together, and maybe there is no forgetting, you know, that it takes a lot of hard work to go along with all that talent that they've got.
And one of the things I took away from the Dylan Cease interview that Vinny did, and well done by Vinny, is that they all understand that you just can't throw your jock out there and win the Central. And Vinny, I mean, and Dylan was talking about, man, when I had my first experience in the playoffs, I was out here throwing 101 because I didn't know, the adrenaline got me hyped up. So these experiences of failure of last year and the failure that happened in 2021, I think in a odd way will drive these guys to greatness because they know they have the talent here. They all know that they are the best team in the AL Central on paper. Now it's got to put it all together. With the failure of 2021 in the playoffs and the total failure of 2022, I think these guys are motivated, and Pedro Grifol is the right leader to move them up in the top of the AL Central. And I know that I am holding them to a more of a championship standard of the whole league, but baby steps. I think that Dylan Cease and all the rest of those players know that they're better than the AL Central foes, and they're hungry to prove it this year and stomp these people into submission.
Yeah, some throat-stopping, Tom, mm-hmm. I think, as Tim Anderson once said. Some interesting quotes that did stick out there. I thought it was interesting that he wanted to pick the right words when saying the White Sox have a real big desire to show everyone that's not who we are. I don't know if he was trying not to swear and be a little bit more pumped up about that one, but just choosing his words carefully, and that does seem to be consistent with what Joe Kelly and Yasmani Grandal have been saying this offseason as well. And he also said, focus inward, focus on you. Probably Yogi stuff on that one. But hard to dispute us being the most talented team, and we don't have any excuses. We have to execute. So the White Sox, again, like you said, they understand the job. They understand what they didn't do last year. And I think it was, you know, very telling to us when it was like, oh, here comes White Sox momentum when we were doing all the post-game shows. Here's some White Sox momentum, and here's it killed by a four-game losing streak. Mm-hmm. And Dylan even kind of said that it was the season was pretty average all the way through, where they'd win three and then lose four, win two, then lose five. Like, it evened it out with an 81-81 season. So I think you make a great point that, like, maybe those failures will hopefully push the White Sox, and I think a big thing about it is that communication with Pedro Grifol. One of the interesting things that Dylan said was that one of the guys that he trains with, one of the major leaguers he trains with, said, I wish we hired that guy, referring to Pedro Grifol. I did a little bit of digging. Rapid Sports Group?
Yes.
Rapid Sports Group is the place where Dylan trains down in Georgia. Was it Drew Waters, current Royals outfielder? You know, like, I was looking through all this stuff, and I'm like, all right, who are the major leaguers tagged in all these Instagram videos that also had a managerial open? And that was the only guy that I could find.
The guy that they did a video with the White Sox too. He actually was crossing paths with Charlie Blackmon while Charlie Blackmon was leaving the facility. And so I was like, maybe Charlie Blackmon said that, but they got a solid manager and Bud Black, right, still. So I'm sure it's not him, but yeah, Drew Waters is like, yeah, that guy was instrumental in the Royals doing what the Royals do. And I'm sure that there's some people, especially Salvi Perez, that wanted him to be the head boss there in Kansas City. But I've been hearing only good things from Pedro Grifol. I've not heard one bad thing. Yes, he has not managed any games or had a team meeting as yet. But as hiring goes, from a guy he didn't know before this to now, I could not have been in better hire for the White Sox, I don't think.
Well, I find it very interesting that Dylan's describing the way that he's reaching out as just trying to get him to know him as a person, and that Dylan's emphasizing communication. So I do wonder, where Pedro Grifol, in every other interview, like, it's tough to pull anything besides baseball out of him. So it's interesting to see, like, with his players, that he's taking the exact opposite route. Like, obviously, we're going to be around baseball for 162 games, hopefully more with playoffs, in 2023. But let me get to know you as a person. He's referred to the man that you are as well a lot. So an interesting approach. Have you guys seen stuff like this before? Like, someone that has kind of taken this, you know, really personable route to managing before?
Not with the White Sox, because as we've seen it, they've been pretty much the people that the White Sox people know. I just think, as I've always said, a manager's more of a philosopher. He's more of a dealing with personalities guy, and that's good that he's reaching out to the actual people, not the baseball person. They want to know about the person. What do you? What gets you hyped? What gets you low? What do you like? How do you like to be managed? You know, because this is a new person to the organization. He's the one that has to ingratiate himself to that team, not the other way around. There's 26 other people there. He has to maneuver between those people, not them maneuver to how he feels. And so it's good that he's reaching out to these people and having decent lengthy conversations. He said like a 30-minute conversation after he got hired. So if he's doing this to all the players, I think that goes a long way with these players just to say he doesn't just care about me as some guy that – wins him baseball games, makes him look better. He actually cares about me as a person. And if you feel like a person, your boss, your higher up, actually cares about you as a person, maybe you perform that much better.
Well, I'd answer that question from you, Sean, in a few different ways. I mean, I think Ricky Renteria definitely did that kind of thing, had that type of relationship with a lot of these players. I remember a story I did on Ricky a few springs back, you know, some moments, some really impressive moments of connecting with Tim Anderson and connecting with Lucas Giolito, you know, really, really caring about their success, like you just said there, Herb. And I also wouldn't color everybody who hasn't necessarily gone to that length in a light of being careless or anything like that. Mm-hmm. We heard a lot of really positive reviews for the kind of person that Tony La Russa was to these guys and the relationships that he had with them. Even someone where everybody was so worried about, oh, is he going to get along well with Tim Anderson, the kind of modern baseball player that Tim Anderson is versus the very not modern baseball manager that Tony La Russa is. And those two seemed, from a relationship standpoint, to work really well together. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's binary, you know what I mean? But I think Pedro Grifol can definitely deserve the kudos for going out and doing this kind of thing and making that part of his philosophy. I definitely get big-time Ricky Renteria vibes on that front as well.
I do wonder, too, now having the hitting staff turnover, I do wonder, you know, what the communication was like with Don Cooper and the pitching staff compared to Ethan Katz and the pitching staff. And I said that, you know, they've updated that language. They're speaking more of a modern game, but I do wonder if the communication is stronger. And I do wonder now, like with the change from Frank Menachino to Pedro Grifol and the staff that he's brought in, I do wonder if that communication's improved. And we saw the White Sox pitching under Ethan Katz improve immensely compared to Don Cooper. And obviously, you know, they also brought in Lance Lynn. He's been pretty good. But Carlos Rodon wasn't as good as he was under Ethan Katz compared to Don Cooper. Same with Dylan Cease. Dylan was obviously a little bit younger. But I do wonder if that's another big part of this, is like now the communication is going to be happening on the offensive side. And, you know, that 81 and 81 team can take a step up because the offense is being improved. They're having those daily conversations. They are having those basic human interactions that allows you to trust guys easier. And if, you know, this guy is someone that you trust and built up a relationship over the past 4 months, and then he comes and brings you information, maybe it's easier to take it from that guy. You know, I'm just trying to think of positives from this style and this communication style, and hopefully that's the connections that are made for the Sox.
And like I said before, it's not necessarily one size fits all for all the players. Some people don't want to hear from manager, hitting coach, because they have their system. They have the way they do things. Hey, thanks for checking in. I'll be over here. I'll be doing my off-season program because I know how to get my thing right. You know, some people go back to their initial coaches, like Lucas Giolito did with Ethan Katz outside of the organization at the time. Some people, their swings are set up by their dads or their first coach. And so, yeah, thank you for your input, hitting coach, but I'm going to be over here working on my swing. So they have to find the balance between how much information they need to give each individual player, because they don't necessarily learn the same. Different people learn different and also want to hear from the manager differently. Some people want to be talked to all the time. Some people want to be left alone as a grown man. So Pedro and his staff need to find that balance once they hit spring training out there. And I'm glad it's like a still 6 weeks to a month, 2 months out there. So you really get to know your people. If you're a veteran, like if you're like a longtime manager, 2 months is a lot of time to be spending with the same people, especially when you're going 6 months more with those same people. 2 months for the White Sox to learn the fundamentals under Pedro Grifol and what he wants and what the players want from those coaching staff, I think is a nice establishing thing down there in Arizona.
Herb, These socks are incredible.
Oh, you like them? Oh, sorry.
Can we get Herb socks in the
shot
like here?
New Order socks?
No, Christmas. Nice. You know when you're a kid, you didn't like getting socks, and so nowadays I just tell my fiance and her family to just give me socks, and so I have I've been wearing different pairs of socks, kind of colorful, which is not my style, every day. I just like a nice sock.
You got purple or blue ones on,
they're
too.
Just blue. They're just navy blue Nike socks.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're not impressive. Herbs are nice.
I have some red ones that I usually don't wear. I might wear tomorrow. But, yeah, this is if somebody gives me a Christmas gift and it's socks, I'm in. That's all of me.
There you go. All right.
I mean, just how different life is. Like, kids used to – I used to hate socks. Like, absolutely detest them, not wear them at all. Now I can't live without them.
Yeah, but now that I spend my own money, I'm not getting, like, $5 from my mom, like, every time I leave the house or whatever. Like, you know, hey, go buy
Have you ever bought your own socks?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Yes. I've never bought my own
socks. Well, it's a horrible experience.
Are you not an adult man?
No, I don't. I just wear the same socks.
I'm with Herb that, like – You know, I now cherish socks and underwear as a gift because I don't want to spend my money on that.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, you got to get exactly what you want. Uh-huh. I don't want people picking those garments for me.
Yeah, my socks. Yeah. I'm dressed like this, so I barely pick anything.
Hanes is reliable. Anyways,
see, I think it is important when you cover the White Sox that you do have actual socks. Yeah. Talk.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think so too. We'll take another break here, and then we'll recap a little bit more of Cease here. Got some stuff on the changeup. He mentioned Lance Lynn being the sheriff that I thought was a funny picture in my head. And then maybe we'll talk a little bit about agencies as well.
Greg, I'm not one of those people who wears socks to bed. I sweat too much and my feet would sweat. And no, I'm not that person. But I wear them every other time. I barely wear bare feet. Socks are essential for me. Type 2 diabetes is part of it, but also I just don't like the bare ground touching my bare feet.
I like slippers in my household, you know. I'm with you. I don't like bare feet touching the hardwood.
Slippers and robes. What
is this? This is an old man
the
show.
Young cats over here wearing robes and slippers.
I never said robes.
It'll change your life.
I think slippers will change your life. You're not wrong about that, Kevin. Robe. You won't also change your life. The ComEd Energy Efficiency Program. It's committed to helping families and businesses in the communities we serve manage energy usage and lower energy bills. Now and into the future, ComEd offers a wide array of incentives on lighting and other efficiency upgrades to commercial, industrial, and public sector customers of all sizes across our territory. And customers can inquire about how to upgrade outdated lighting to energy and money-saving efficient LED lights. Learn more about network lighting to operate your lights through your mobile device and track your facility's energy usage and more. Incentives have recently increased for indoor-outdoor lighting and network lighting controls, making these projects even more cost-effective than before. So visit ComEd.com/poweringbiz. That's ComEd.com/poweringbiz. Now to start saving money and energy and to start a project, contact us at 1-855-433-2700. And for more information, is email businessee@comed.com or publicsectoree@comed.com. Also got to let you know about FOCO. Chicago, you've already got the best coverage for your favorite teams, so get fitted in the best sports gear around. FOCO has you covered from Soldier Field to the front room, north or south side, with hoodies, slippers, signs, bobbleheads, and everything in between. Get decked out like DeMar with apparel from the leaders in sports merch and collectibles, FOCO. That's FOCO. If you're looking for the perfect gift for the football fan in your life, FOCO's got you covered with hoodies to fight that Lake Michigan breeze. So check out FOCO.com, FOCO.com, or click the link in the description below. And for all non-presale items, use the promo code CHGO for 10% off, again, at FOCO, FOCO.com. I thought it was really interesting when you brought up Scott Boras and that conversation with Dylan. We just talked about the arbitration numbers. He got like 300,000 more than MLB trade rumors projected him, but still the big years will be his free agent years. And he made the switch to go from one agency to Scott Boras, the agent in Major League Baseball. Not the first guy to bring up that Scott Boras should write a book. And especially now with the Carlos Correa stuff, I think he's got like eight chapters. There's a book.
All by itself.
But what did you glean from the Scott Boras conversation or anything that C said?
Well, listen, I remember when I was younger and you know, when you're in the fan realm and everything like that, Scott Boras, for some reason, was someone you're supposed to hate, someone you're not supposed to like, right? He's a one of baseball's bad guys or something like that. And as both I've grown older and become, you know, someone who covers the sport and doesn't have a rooting interest anymore, strikes me as not necessarily a bad guy. He's someone who is just tremendous at his job. And I think you get there in the answer from Dylan, not necessarily, you know, any trade secrets or anything, but a, just a little bit of a peel back, a look back behind the curtain at some of the things that make him so good at this job, at his job. And, you know, he's talking to his client here who in a few years is going to be hitting that open market. And nobody knows, perhaps in baseball, more than Scott Boras what the market is looking for, what those teams are looking for. And so if you're going to sit here and go, Scott Boras is telling Dylan Cease what he needs to do to be better, and he's going over analytics with Dylan Cease, what? Isn't that Ethan Katz's job kind of thing? Well, Scott Boras knows what other what sort of analytics other teams are looking at when they want to hand out a big contract. He knows what the market is going to be interested in when it comes to handing out a gigantic contract, which if Dylan Cease keeps pitching like this, he's going to get. So I don't think that that's a bad thing at all. I think that's a very interesting look at what is the job of the agent when someone's not a free agent yet, and it is preparing yourself to be the best possible, the most sellable version of yourself, the one that teams are going to be bidding over, even if it's a few years from now. You want to start laying that groundwork right now.
I mean, I agree with Vinny. I used to hate Scott Boras, specifically because of the White Sox fan. Kenny Williams could not work with him. Jerry Reinsdorf hated the man. I don't know if that still exists, but Rick Hahn has subsequently, like, you know, smoothed out the relationship because Rick is a contract negotiator, a guy who's been a player agent, so he understands the lingo. And so if Scott Boras gets your client what he needs, what he desires, did anybody see Chris Bryant getting the deal that Chris Bryant got in Colorado? No. The man has been hurt for years, hadn't been the MVP caliber he was, still getting $26 million a year. Now, we got two teams with two doctors telling these people that Carlos Correa cannot play or he will is
one
injury.
One doctor
telling them they can't play. And two of those teams are believing him. Minnesota's like, we had him last year. We're good. Fuck that. Gave him money. So every time I see a player fire their agent and hire Scott Boras, that tells me that player is confident in himself. That tells me that player knows that they want top dollar. They want no money left in the owner's pockets. They want all their money. And so they're going to perform that way to make all that money. And so Dylan Cease is smart to change his agency to Scott Boras. And Scott Boras, I think, is a former player, so he knows the game that way, and also he knows the law and baseball contracts. So I see it as a great thing that he has changed his ownership or his agency to Scott Boras and doing that, because that means that that man knows that he's going to get broke off when it's time to get free agency money.
I had no idea that Scott Boras actually played baseball. He was a walk-on for the University of Pacific. As of 2009, he was top 10 in school history in multiple offensive categories. I think he wrote his own Wikipedia page. He was inducted into
probably just ripped right from the Boras Corp website, one of the two.
True. He was inducted to the Pacific Athletics Hall of Fame in 95, was the team's annual most improved player award. The most improved player award was named in his honor at Pacific University, and then spent 4 years in minor league ball with the Cards and Cubs. I had no idea that he played. I think obvious. I can look at Baseball Reference and tell him this, but like what Scott Boras will say is basically like, hey, looking at your 2022, like it's great that you finished second in Cy Young, but you also led the league in walks. Like that's going to be something that's going to be brought up immediately in contract negotiations, or they're going to bring up certain stats and everything. And like, it's all about making you, like you said, the most sellable product, the easiest, most polished product. Carlos Rodon had a fantastic 2022 and, you know, 2021, but it's that September months in 2021 where his arm was given out on him and he was throwing 92 that teams probably looked into more than anything else. It's just about somebody who can package you, and Dylan's not worrying about packaging himself. He's just trying to be himself. He's just trying to go out there and pitch and work on his own arsenal. So an interesting player. I mean, just a great talk.
Scott Boras might not be, an Ethan Katz level expert on, you know, what sort of spin you want to put on a pitch like
this
that.
This is how you use the core velocity belt.
But he is the world's foremost expert in getting a Major League Baseball player a gigantic contract. And that is, something that you definitely not just have to, but should want to have your ears wide open to. And it sounds like Scott Boras makes it real easy because you've got Dylan Cease talking about not just how knowledgeable Scott Boras is, but how easy to talk to he is in general.
So and I hope he's telling him, hey, yeah, you're leading the league in walks, but look at your batted ball profile. You're not getting hit that hard. Your barrel percentage has gone down from a good 2021. It's gone down from there. So pitch the ball to him. I know you want the strikeout, and strikeout is king. But also, sometimes you just got to let these people hit it and let the people feel behind you. And so you can have quicker outs, and you can go longer to innings. We've seen him learn that throughout the year, like kind of like early in the year. I was disappointed. I was like, Dylan Cease and Michael Kopech at the time, they weren't going long. The length of the games were like five and a third. And then they started lengthening out, not looking for strikeouts, letting the team hit the ball.
There was also the lockout.
In the second half, Dylan Cease, I think, lost some of the velocity or lost some of the bite, lost some of the curve, the slider spin on it, and had to rely on actually having this batter hit the ball early in the count instead of going deep into counts because he was striking out everybody and their mom in the first half.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that's interesting. I think especially it seemed like later on in the season that left-handers just became more successful against him, and I think that's why we heard him bring up the changeup. And you look at the stats, at least between right-handers and left-handers. Against lefties, lefties had a 219, 319, and 325. Sorry, a 219 batting average, a 319 on-base percentage, and a 325 slugging percentage. 34 walks against right-handers, 161 batting average, 238 on-base percentage, 289 slugging percentage, 44 walks. But you look at the... Actually, I think the 44 walks was the left-handed batter. So he had more walks against lefties than righties and then also in less plate appearances. So, you know, lefties were walking more. They were hitting them harder. They were getting on more consistently. And the biggest thing to get guys off of that is, you know, they were sticking on the fastball. His slider kind of, as long as it's, you know, if it's going out of the zone, it's really not a pitch that lefties will want to go on to. So you think that changeup is the most natural step. And I think it's just an interesting place for him to go to because – looking at how dominant he was, he had a run value between his pitches in 2022 of minus 36.1. That is the 16th highest in StatCast era. And he used 96.6% of his pitches were fastball, slider, and curveball. Kershaw had a similar arsenal to that in 2015. Verlander in 2019 and Cole in 2019 were at 90%. Verlander in 2018 was above 97%. Kershaw in 2016 was at 98%. Verlander and DeGrom in 2016 and 2019 were at around 90%. But really, Cease being at that 97 level is kind of unique. So having more offerings will be very interesting. But his changeup's kind of weird. He mentioned his arm speed and trying to figure out like the feel for that pitch. It's a very odd pitch because this changeup, and this is minimum 75 results for the changeup and minimum 100 results for the fastball on StatCast. His changeup velocity is below 80 miles per hour, and his fastball velocity, obviously, over 90 miles per hour. Here are the pitchers that have a changeup velocity below 80 on their below 80 miles per hour and a fastball velocity over 90. Eli Morgan of the Guardians, his changeup is at 75.9 miles per hour. His fastball is at 92.1. Dylan Cease, his changeup's at 77.9 miles per hour. His fastball at 69.8 miles per hour. Tyler Anderson, former 96.8. Sorry. Tyler Anderson, former of the Dodgers, now the Angels, at 79 miles per hour first changeup, 90.7 miles per hour first fastball. Nick Martinez of the Padres, 79.7 miles per hour on his changeup, 84.3 on his fastballs. Jarrell Cotton, 79.7 miles per hour on his changeup, 92.7 miles per hour on his fastball. The real point that I'm trying to make, Cease's difference between his fastball and changeup, 18.9 miles per hour. Eli Morgan, 16.2, then Nick Martinez at 13.7, Jarrell Cotton at 13, and Tyler Anderson at 11.7. Like, he's the only person outside of Eli Morgan that has that 15-mile-per-hour difference between his fastball and curveball. He's the only...
Sounds like that might be changing.
Yes, right. And that's well, that's the thing, is, like, with Lucas, like, the big thing that Stoney always talks about is the fact that it's, like, about 11 miles per hour difference between his average fastball velocity and his changeup velocity. In 2021, his good year was around 93.8 compared to 81.5. And it's just that it's such a drastic difference. It's just you're delaying that timing so much. And I think Cease is at a point where that 18 is way too different. Like the major league average is around 11 to 10. You see some vast differences between like Sandy Alcantara, who could throw like a 99 per hour sinker and then bust out a 92 mile per hour changeup. So the pitch velocity doesn't matter too much, but I think Dylan's trying to talk about feel and just making
fooling,
it feel.
It's not fooling anybody.
It's not fooling right. anybody, and it's not natural, right? Right? Like the 18 miles per hour difference is just because he's trying to throw the ball as slow as he possibly right. can.
Yeah.
Where now he's trying to work it on arm speed, and he's not even on the mound. Like you said today, he's getting on the mound for the first time today. Like that's why he's just trying to make it a natural throwing motion on the ground in his routine, just so it comes off the mound with a feel pitch. Like that's what a changeup is. It's not really a grip pitch. It's not really, fastball, trying to get backspin on it, whatever. It's just all based on feel and trying to develop that feel. And if he's able to get that feel, like, I mean, this arsenal could be stupendous. I mean, his spin rates already on the changeup, slider, and fastball are top echelon. So if he can even get an average changeup, like, this is Cy Young worthy. So that got me really excited. So,
and I haven't seen the video of him throwing a changeup yet. I mean, I probably saw it during just games, but it has to be something different with the delivery too, like where he's not throwing
he slows
a
down
fastball,
right,
and it's not coming through the, I mean,
the whole mechanic slows down rather than it being a grip and a just a feel for it.
And so I mean, if he's got the feel and he's got the grip for it, I would love for him to use it a little bit more. But like Lucas does, if he doesn't, shelf it. You know, you have three other top-notch major league pitches. Go with those. Keep with those pitches and don't try to. I know, being better and trying to improve is always part of our athlete's repertoire. But if it's not broke, don't fix it. Try to fix the other pitches. Like, gear up that slider a little bit more. Make that fastball a little bit more spin. I know he's trying to do all these things, but I would say focus on the pitches, your strengths, instead of your weaknesses.
He said things will be the same, but with better command. And, I mean, that's the biggest thing. If his fastball has better command, if his slider has better command, he'll get more outs, he'll walk less people. Same with his curveball. But I think just having that fourth offering, especially two left-handers, that can make him just unstoppable, just because having that difference of that pitches and then being able to have another pitch to go to versus lefties, I mean, that's just where I think you could put him over the edge.
I would think also moving on the rubber to lefties, like, how his pitches and his sliders don't work to lefties too much because it's way inside and they're not going to take it. Maybe moving to the third base side of the mound and then throwing that slider where you need to throw it, because it can look a little bit different. The shape of the pitch can be look a little different. Tinkering with things on the mound all the time should be part of these pitchers' repertoire.
I'm guessing Ethan Katz has a binder full of all
this. I'm sure, he's got but they're plan. Like, I see most of them, they're like in the middle of the mound. I'm like, change some things up.
We'll see about that. Anyways, great work today, Vinny, with the interview. Herb, appreciate you. Follow Vinny on Twitter, at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. He's got two different posts up on allchgo.com. The full recap of the Dylan Cease interview, written out quotes and everything from Dylan. So if you could just take that process, if it's easier for you to process that information reading, check out allchgo.com. Also got clips of Dansby Swanson and Dylan Cease's at-bat between each other, Marietta versus Milton, if you want to see those intertwined. And then also, that's Herb Lawrence. You can follow him on Twitter, at EckernWall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader.
That's Hugh Hefner.
And shout out to Kevin Wells, Hugh Hefner, for producing the show, this robe and sandals.
Comment of the day.
I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. We will talk to you tomorrow at 4 p.m. here on the CHGO Sports YouTube channel.